Cherie, can you hear me?
Cherie, can you hear me?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, just checking. This is Mickey Hillock.
How's your day going?
Hey, Cherie, it's David. I sent you a couple of emails a minute ago. Something needs to go out before close of business today.
Got it. Will do.
I bet that never happens in Terrell and economic development. Stuff comes in today and has to be back out the same day.
You know, only about once a week, David.
David, I have not heard back if Roger was going to join, but I assume he is.
Yeah, he's supposed to.
Okay. There is somebody might be snacking on the call. Can't tell if it's maybe Mickey or Carlton.
Doing what? This is Mickey.
Snacking.
Smacking?
Snacking.
I don't, well, let me, I had it muted.
Sheree, that might have been me.
Oh, sorry, Randy.
I wasn't snacking. I was drumming on my table here. I forgot I wasn't on mute. I'm a drummer. I'm always pounding them.
Sheree, are you seeing my picture?
I am not. Oh, now I see Carlton, so it must have been him.
I wasn't snacking. Yeah, I was eating.
Is here also.
Hello, Gay.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Very good. Looks like Roger, we have Roger.
Roger, did you get that video?
Which video?
The one from yesterday.
No.
But I thought Debbie was going to send you that video.
I have not.
Okay, we figured out. It's 250 meg, but we figured out a way to get it to you. So we'll get it to you today for sure.
It's funny that you brought that up first, because I had a note just before this meeting to comment on that. That reminds me of both a deposition and a sales presentation.
It kind of goes back and forth between the two, doesn't it?
Oh, man.
They were not easy, were they?
Well, you know, at first they started out kind of with good information. And then I guess Joe said, well, okay, so we're going to be the examiners. And then at one point I said, you know, further information would be helpful. And boy, they didn't like that. And I realized quickly, they're still playing the role of the examiner.
Well, they're good people. They know a lot. Joe is actually one of the former judges for Baldrige at the national program. They still call him to ask him his advice on when they revise the criteria at the national level each year. Jeannie has coached multiple national award winners, and including currently, and Catherine, who is a PhD and former associate superintendent, has also coached several recipients at the national level. So you were getting the A team in terms of coaches.
Interesting. Yeah, they came across that caliber. I'll tell you, a couple times for both Deborah and David's benefit, a couple times I thought, you know, it would be interesting to have one or two of them sit in with a little discussion with the board or the executive committee. You know, there was a question raised, and what does that do for you?
Yeah.
So at what end and why do you do that?
Yeah. They make it sound so easy and simple, don't they?
Well, I mean, at one point I started thinking, well, now, wait a minute. We're not the staff. We're the board. How far in the weeds do they anticipate board members and executive committees being involved in the process?
I think from their perspective, looking at the governance criteria, they think you should stay out of the weeds. You should stay at the strategic level, but that you should have a really comfortable feeling about the and you know, where we're going with what you ask us to do, so that you feel comfortable in doing what you have to do. But their role was to play the bad guys yesterday. And I've been on the receiving end of that. And so is David and a lot of people in this call that are staff. And so I do want to tell you very quickly, because I know you're getting into your meeting, is that I did speak with the Quality Texas team leader today, and they definitely would like you available as part of a 10 o'clock that they're having with several of us. And you'll get an invitation to a Zoom meeting, but that they don't intend to take a lot of your time. They understand it's valuable and this is not your day job, but that they would like you available if possible to ask you a few questions from your perspective as a board member. So I did confirm that today, this morning when I spoke with him.
And you limited it to three questions?
Well, no, I didn't do that.
Roger, okay. We now have everyone except for David Bristol. I know he has planned on joining, but we do have a quorum and we can begin when you're ready.
Okay. We'll call the meeting to order at 1:01 p.m. This is the November 10th, 2020 meeting of the North Central Texas Workforce Development Board Executive Committee meeting. At this time, the public telephone line will be unmuted. Members of the public may comment on any item on today's agenda. If you wish to do so, please announce your name, city of residence, the agenda item on which you're speaking. A maximum of 3 minutes will be permitted per speaker. At the conclusion of this opportunity, public telephone line will be muted for the duration of the meeting. Do we have anybody wishing to make a public comment? Hearing none, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the meeting of September 15, 2020. Do we have any discussion on the item? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
This is Carlton. Roger and I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Carlton. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
So moved. This is Mickey.
We have a motion and a second from Mickey. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Up for discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the first item is the committee chair updates, and we have the Workforce Development Committee, Mr. Jason Gomez. If you're online, I don't have your picture online, but if you're there, go ahead and preface
it. Am I not visible? Can you hear me?
You yes, are.
Sir. Oh, okay, good. Well, it'd probably be better for everyone if I wasn't visible. I can easily turn it off if I need to. Good afternoon, everyone. Workforce Development Committee met on October 27th. We approved our minutes from the previous meeting, which was August 25th. The committee also moved to recommend the approval of the board policy on unlikely to return eligibility requirements for our WIO dislocated workers. This policy will be on the November consent agenda item. A little detail regarding that policy, the unlikely to return is one of several criteria used to determine eligibility under WIOA dislocated workers. The TWC requires boards to develop a policy to define the period of time an individual must seek employment since termination, layoff, et cetera, and determine eligibility in order to determine eligibility under unlikely to return. So the policy we recommended for approval defines the period of time or unlikely to return as 6 to 12 weeks. And this 6 to 12 weeks may depend upon the occupation, the economy, or the applicant's verified job searches. So that's the policy. Again, that will be on the November consent agenda items. Is there any questions on that? Tammy Davis did the presentation. If Tammy's here, she may be able to answer any further questions. If there are no questions, okay. We also got an update on the Texas Rising Star program. Ms. Armstrong and Ms. Bagsby presented this update. They provided an overview of the program, which most of us basically know about it, the rules and standards, and also a four-year review of upcoming TRS changes and implementation. I have a few of my notes that I wrote down regarding the program because this is a program that I'm interested in. And so Dana or Morgan or any other expert, or maybe Kelly, I guess, if I get anything seems wrong, let me know. But these are some of my notes regarding that I thought was interested. So we have about 600 providers, and out of those 600, approximately 97 of them participate in the Rising Star program. So based on my math, it's about 15 to 16% of our providers that participate in the program. I think our goal is to increase that number to approximately 120 providers. I don't know how long that goal is. Is that for this next upcoming year or whenever it is? But they are actively working to increase that numbers. Now, one of the incentives for providers to be part of the Rising Star program is they may receive increased reimbursement rates. Again, and Kelly, this is where I might have this wrong, but I believe you said that a reimbursement may be around $32.66 for someone not participating in the program. Mm-hmm. And someone who is participating in the program who's at a four-star level can receive up to $44.11, which is about a 35% increase in what they can receive. Now, again, this is where I make sure I have this right. But for some providers, the difficulty is that they're not allowed to be reimbursed more than what their normal charging fee is. So I don't know if that's one of the hindrances for providers getting this program, because if they don't charge that much, they can't get that much for you know, a non-supplemental student. So in addition, of course, TRS, I think we've heard this before, you know, they provide opportunities in addition to the extra reimbursement. They can get curriculum, training. Sometimes they can get grants for equipment and supplies. So it was a good update. But I think part of the big update, again, Kelly, if you want to jump in, is that there are upcoming changes that TWC is putting in regarding the program and all providers over the next 4 years. You want to add to that, Kelly?
Well, you got it you're right on target. Yeah, I believe over the next 5 years, TWC, it's currently out for public comment. They are looking at ensuring that anybody who is providing subsidy care meet a certain level of care as it relates to child care licensing, so that providers who have a lot of deficiencies in certain areas may not be able to, in the future, be able to provide subsidy care for our kids. So, like I said, a lot of what Jason said is currently out for public comment. I believe that ends at the end of this month. So, you know, some of the changes are really good. And some of the others, you know, may have weakened the Texas Rising Star program a little. But, you know, we're still going to plug along and get as many providers into the program that we can.
So again, Kelly, on that update, is that some of the rules that are being proposed are basically increasing the standard of care, or some of the rules and regulations maybe, in order for providers to still be allowed to be a provider. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're kind of reweighting some of the criteria. So like deficiencies may not count as heavily as other areas.
Okay. Very good.
Child care licensing deficiencies. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a lot of, most of it is really in that area is under the weighting of how they're doing the actual criteria.
Okay. Any questions from the executive committee or comments from staff? Okay. If there are none, that's my update.
Hey, Jason. Roger. Jason. Miss Kenny, I got one question. Are we just supposed to be in the receive mode for this? In other words, the policymakers have already decided all this? Or is there any input from the boards about how this is moving forward?
So from my understanding, you know, just from dealing in public education, the comment period is an opportunity for anyone to make comments. And usually, oftentimes, it is staff and people who are in the business who are the ones who are going to make comments to those rules. As far as a board, Kelly, have you guys has any of the staff made comments regarding the upcoming rule changes or maybe our contractor?
Well, actually, the contractor hasn't, because they really are not involved in the Texas Rising Star program. Those staff are at the board level, and we will be making comment to the rules, to the what's the word I'm looking for? Proposed rules. We will be making comment.
Okay.
Is there anything regarding the comments that you want to share regarding what might be or your concerns or?
I think some of the concerns were on the deficiencies, kind of, you know, watering down the deficiencies, depending on the area that it's in. That was some of my staff's concern. But at this point, I don't have them all. They're due today by my staff, so I'm still waiting on those to come in. But Kenny, back to your question, were you asking if the board?
I was just wondering if as a board, are going to you know, have a chance to see those comments or to reinforce them in some way to say that, you know, we as a board, you know, agree and would like to see action, just words of support, if nothing else, to emphasize that to TWC before they, you know, move in a direction that we're not supportive of. Just a suggestion.
Noted.
Great. Roger, if there's no one else, that concludes my update.
Excellent. Excellent. Just for my benefit, Kelly, when you make comments during the comment period, you're doing it on behalf of the board, correct?
I would say yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's very operational.
But the document, the signatory is who?
Is Workforce Solutions.
Okay. And David, I would think that they would take that as behalf of the board, would they not? You're muted. Okay. I got that. Yes. So Kelly is providing our comments. And if I'm not mistaken, once those comments are taken into consideration, GWC then will then have action that they take.
That is correct. They will go through all the comments throughout the state from everybody who has submitted the comments. And they will do their due diligence. And, you know, if they're seeing a lot of comments in one area, they may change what they're going to propose to the commissioners. But, you know, all those comments are due this month. They will make decisions between now and January 1, and then those new rules will be in effect January 1.
Okay. I guess where I was going with that is, does it take an action by TWC at one of their meetings?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So you still have another.
Correct. We'll have another opportunity to make comment.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that for a couple different reasons.
But, yeah.
So Kelly comes back to us and says they didn't accept our comments, but and we still feel about this, we have the option of speaking at the meeting.
Yeah. Roger, I'd like to ask Kelly a question.
Go ahead.
Kelly, on these deficiencies, how many of those have to do with the meal program that those caregivers have in place?
None of them will have to do with the meal program because we don't regulate that.
Okay. Who regulates that?
That is the USDA.
Okay.
I believe. Yeah.
Deborah's saying yes. Okay, anything else? Workforce development or TRS? Okay, oversight and accountability. Carlton, do you want to preface this?
Yeah, we met. We actually had three things on the agenda, but talked about two of them. The third one you will see is item C coming up. Randy and Michael are both here, and so Randy's going to tell us that we're a little bit behind on our spending. And Michael's going to tell you that we either met or exceeded all of our performance goals in August. So if you guys want to, go ahead.
Who's got the first bit of good news?
Yeah, Randy, go right ahead.
Actually, Carlton, I was not planning on going over the workforce expenditures. I was going to, since we went over at the oversight, I wasn't going, I was going to wait and go over at the board meeting and not go over it in detail in this particular meeting.
Very good. And I know that it was good to hear, Roger, that we exceeded, met or exceeded our, all of our goals. And that was August, correct, Michael?
Yes, you're correct. We met all of the 14 performance measures for which we have available data.
All right, very good. So that will conclude our report, Roger.
Okay, very good. Item B, key priority statements, tip strategies. My screen just blinked off. Okay, I see what happened. And who are we going to have present this?
That'll be...
It's Tip Strategies is joining us. Yes.
Okay, you have the floor.
Thank you guys very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I apologize. I got some of these newfangled AirPods, and they died 2 seconds ago.
So, but you had backup.
I did, but it required me, running down the hallway to grab it. So, thank you guys. So you guys are well aware of all the hard work that you have done and that we have helped support you in developing key priority statements. So I will move through this relatively quickly at the beginning. And I'll pause when we actually get to the statements here in a moment. But I think everyone received these as part of their packets. And so hopefully if you've had a chance to look at that and have some thoughts for us, we would welcome it. But just a reminder, Jacqueline, let's go to the next slide. Just a reminder of, kind of how this started. You guys had identified this last year, three different areas as priorities for the board. First one being childcare, second one career exploration, and then community partnerships. And many of you participated in the sessions that we held in August and September. And we got a lot of great feedback from the board members, as well as some interviews that we did with staff separately. So thanks, everyone. And just a reminder, all of this fits under your structure of vision, mission, and values. Don't have to read those to you again. And so the structure that these priority statements fit within, as you know, it's the key priority statement is really at this a high level in the structure of the planning for the board. And under each one of the statements will be a purpose / strategy. And then, how are we going to measure whether we're successful and what are the actions that would support each one of these goals or statements? So we're going to develop that for each one. So the definitions for this, a key priority statement is really the broader goal or outcome that you're looking to support. Purpose being the strategy that would describe the approach for fulfilling that goal. And then the measure is, really the objective and, how are we going to measure this, and the action being the tactics or initiatives that would support that. So this is the structure that you guys approved and have worked with in the past. And so just a reminder of how this is laid out in the language that we're using. And Christina, feel free to pipe in if I misrepresent anything here. All right. And so from a process standpoint, we're taking the work that you guys have done up to this point, and we've developed a draft key priority statement for each of these priority areas that the board has identified. And then the next step would be if you guys are good with the direction that these statements feel like they capture the intent of the board in terms of the direction you'd like for each one of these statements, then with the assistance of the consulting team, we would go off with the staff and sort of build out the purpose measures and actions that would then be brought back to the board at a future date for input and hopefully, you know, modifications and approval in the future. So are you guys with me so far, Roger?
Yes.
Okay. So the statements, and what I'd like to do is I'm actually going to read through each one of the statements and then some of the questions that we sent out to you guys, and then we'll come back to each one just in case there's some questions that you guys have. But really, you know, child care, improving quality of child care in the 14 county region. It's critical to prepping children for school and supporting their parents in their own learning and development. High quality child care leads to greater school readiness, long-term educational attainment, and two-generation economic prosperity. Let's go to the next one, career exploration. Opportunities to broaden career awareness and exploration can better connect youth and adults to in-demand jobs as well as fulfill the needs of employers. So we're capturing both sides of that equation. Supporting career exploration that equips workers with the skills and knowledge required for success in a rapidly changing and digitally driven economy, you know, an acknowledgement that all jobs are really moving. Many jobs are moving in that direction, and that's something that should be an emphasis for the board going forward. And then achieving ambitious workforce and economic goals will require cross-sector partnerships that create innovative solutions for workers and break down silos between organizations. You'll cultivate partnerships at both strategic and operational levels in order to build awareness of programs, share information, and leverage public and private resources to meet goals. So each one of these statements, we feel like we took information from each of the sessions that we held with you guys and captured, you know, this statement at a relatively high level. And so the questions that we have for you guys are, you know, have we captured enough in these statements? Does this, you know, work for you guys? Is there anything missing? Any changes, and does the process that's proposed still work for you guys? I will go back if David or Christina, you know, if there's anything you guys wanted to add in terms of this, I'd welcome any other input before we open it back up to the board.
I think you've done a great summary, Tom. That's exactly where we are. This is just more of a reality check. This is the path forward for us. And so if there's anything you need, some course correction you think we might need or modification of something, now's the time to get it out there. But so, because this is our methodology going forward.
And I will acknowledge, you know, if I were in your shoes, that question of, well, how are we going to achieve these? You know, what the details of what you're going to go forward with is the next step. And so we're really just hoping to capture enough in that goal, that higher level statement, to where you guys feel like, yeah, this is the direction we look forward to the first cut, you know, once you've developed at the strategy level. We're happy to go back to each one if you'd like, or if you guys are, if you have read through them and are good with them, we're happy to get to work.
This is a good one. I would just like to add that I found them to be very clear, concise, and to the point, which were very good. So from my vantage point, I'm very happy with them.
Yeah, I would offer agreement with Gay and David's comments. I think that they're it's a very good very good summation of like David said, exactly where we are, and as you filled in, Tom, the details, and I suspect that that's what we move on to.
Yeah, and the I would encourage you guys, if you know, to go back to your package, because we did share kind of the themes and the highlights of from each one of the sessions, and so those will be some of the building blocks we, the consultants and the staff, will go back and revisit to develop the next level, which would be the strategies.
Okay. Any other comments?
Let me just, Roger, if I may, say thank you to the group in the effort to put these summaries together. As Gay was pointing out, I think one of the fruits of this labor here is very clear and concise communication of intent. And sometimes that's lost when you race to put down a strategy or an objective, and you lose, well, what are we really trying to achieve? And what's been communicated here is more than just a sound bite of what that is. I mean, it's short, it conveys a much larger message. And I think that's really important in this process, so that it serves as a reference point for thought as we move forward. And it's because we'll get lost as we move through strategies and objectives, and to have a way to come back to say, you know, what are we trying to accomplish here? And this can serve as that reminder. So, you know, thank you to the group for their efforts to craft these words here very carefully and I believe very precisely. So Christina and Tom and David and everybody appreciate that effort.
It's going to make it that benefit that comes from this process to the board also benefits the staff, in that we're really honing in on the things that y'all see as the priorities, and now we can get to working on the purposes that support those priorities. So I'm very pleased with where we are, and I think this is going to be it's not going to be a walk in the park, but it's going to be very fruitful, I think, as we go down this road. So I'm very pleased with where we are.
So can you give us an idea of how this unfolds from here?
All right, Tom, you want to take that one, or Christina?
Well, what I wanted to share was that we were presenting the draft key priority statements today to provide the board an opportunity to provide any feedback you might have if you wanted to see revisions. This will be a topic on the board agenda next week, where we will ask the full board to officially adopt these key priority statements. There was a slide in here that talks about the path forward, and we want to make sure that we're on the same page with the board about how we proceed. What I understood from our discussion, and we had talked to Kenny about how to proceed after we had the three board meetings, would be that the board is focusing on the key priority statements. And once those are approved by you, then we will get to work with defining the supporting purposes with TIP strategies. So our latitude within the strategic plan moving forward, you know, we've talked before about how it's a living document, and sometimes we need to tweak what we're doing if our strategy isn't yielding positive results, comes in that bottom portion, you know, in developing those purposes, purpose measures, and action.
So the board is defining the key priority statements, and then we will pick up with tip strategies in developing those purposes. Moving forward, we would be bringing, you know, an update to Strategic Leadership Committee and then to the full board. You know, Kenny can update the board on the progress, or we can present as appropriate.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I look forward to it. Any other comments, discussion on this item? Tom, Jacqueline, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job, and I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much. It's a pleasure to continue working with you.
Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is the Terrell Workforce Lease Amendment. Randy? You still with us, Randy?
Are you muted, Randy?
Randy, you're talking on mute.
I am. I was just talking some gold here. Nobody heard it. It was awesome stuff, let me tell you. So what I'd like to do quickly this afternoon is go over proposed Terrell adjustment or amendment to our current lease for our workforce center in Terrell. This one's a little bit more involved than the typical ones we do, so I'll step through this on a PowerPoint and let you know a little bit about what we're proposing. So I'll go ahead and get started here. Just a little bit of background, just to remind you, we're currently at 109 Tejas Drive there in Terrell, Suite 300. And it just got bought recently by another landlord. That new landlord is CS and RF Investments. A doctor had owned it out there for years. So that particular doctor sold it just recently. It contains 4,389 square feet. We're currently in a five-year lease. If you remember, we brought it back to you in 2019 for a five-year, and that was to go through May 31st of 2024. And it includes an average price over that term currently of $18.30. And why I mean average is this lease bumps at 2% every year. Most all the leases we're getting into now, our broker tells us it's kind of commonplace now, but they all tend to start out at a base rate and go up about 2% a year, give or take. So that's why that's referring to an average. And just another quick reminder, VR staff, you know, we keep reminding you, we're integrating them within our centers as our leases are coming up, our vocational rehab staff. This particular one, we tried and it just didn't work out there. So we didn't get VR staff integrated within this particular location at the time. TWC agreed it wasn't the right time based on what we had available. So we agreed to check at a later date and see when things became available. Hey, Sheree, let's go on. So things have become available. So COG was made aware, our staff was made aware just here recently, right adjacent to us. It's literally on the other side of the wall of our current workforce center. There's 2,623 feet. Now, this was available. I'll just remind you, I think we told you about this earlier. It was available when we were trying to negotiate this a couple of years ago. But TWC at the time really didn't think they wanted the entire square footage. It's 2,600 feet. They have five staff that want to integrate, and they really didn't think they wanted the whole square footage. The landlord at the time really didn't want to divide it up in a way that suited our needs and met their needs as well. So we never could come to an agreement there. So that's how come they weren't integrated. But at this time, that 2,600 became available again, and the Texas Workforce reviewed it, and their VR staff reviewed it, their management staff. I'm not sure why the change of heart, but now they're agreeable to taking the entire 2,600 square feet for their portion. So again, both COG and VR staff have reviewed it. Both are okay with the square footage pretty much as is. We'll talk a little bit in a minute about some minor changes, but it's got some offices already built out and stuff. So they really don't want to make a lot of changes to it. So Sharif, we'll go to the next one. So here's what we're proposing. This is where it gets a little involved. That new suite, the one for the VR, the 2,600 feet, that's referred to as Suite 700. So what we're proposing is a five-year or 60-month lease beginning the later of February 1 or when they get it ready for occupancy. And they're going to do a few things to it. We'll talk about that here in a second. So we think it'll be ready February 1st, if approved. If not, it'll begin once they get all the TI TI Ready Force. And it's a average square footage or average price per square foot there, $1,553. Again, that's an average because it's going to start out at 15, a bump at 2% a year for 5 years. That's where we get that average of $1,553. So here's where it gets a little involved. So the next thing we want to do to make them coterminous, our current lease that we currently have, Suite 300, the 4,389 square feet. Just a reminder, we started that back in 19. We're a couple years into it. We want to extend that approximately 20 months. I say approximately because it depends on when the other one starts, if it's February 1 or March 1. But essentially what we're wanting it to do, we're wanting to make it coterminous with the new suite we're assuming to make them both end at the exact same time. So that's why I'm saying approximately 20 months. Like I said, we think we can get it going February 1st, but if it's not, if it's February 15th or March 1, we would make the extension as of that date and make it coterminous so where they would both end 60 months from that time frame. The average for that would be $17.13 average again because it's bumping 2%. So the combined, when you put those together, when you put those two suites together, the combined for the total 7,000 feet is $16.53 when you combine them both. So Sheree will go next. So I mentioned a little bit of tenant improvement. So very basic. We're wanting to construct a case opening between the two suites. So they'll literally cut out a doorway in the wall that separates them to open that up. So that's referred to as a cased opening. They want to build a janitor closet in the new location with the VR suite, replace lighting within the VR, and then replace paint and carpet. But really not a lot of structure changes, really not a lot of moving walls around, pretty much accepting that as is. So fairly minor TI. And that price I quoted does include this. This wouldn't be on top of it. It does include that TI improvement. The landlord will fund that at the price that was quoted. So as we normally do, we looked at the market again out there. It's hard to find square footage out there. Carlton can attest to this. There's just not a lot available. We were looking to get comps at 7,000 feet. We really couldn't. We got some other buildings that were similar type buildings, but you can see they're all over the place, 2,500 and 4,360 and 2,400. Just trying to get a consideration of the market in Terrell area. And you can see ours that we're proposing is within the market out there. It's not the cheapest, but you see the cheapest really didn't propose any tenant improvement allowance. So that would be additional on top of that, plus moving costs and all that. So where we are, we think is still a good deal, comparatively speaking, for the market in that area. So Sharif, we go one more. So again, y'all have seen this before. We do think it's a good location in Terrell. It's within, like I said, within the pricing comparisons in that area, the location, it's within about a mile of I-20, over 5 car parks per 1,000 square feet. That's good. Typically in commercial buildings, if you can get 4 per 1,000, that's usually pretty good, but this one's over that at over 5 per 1,000. So the parking's pretty good there. And then again, we think that 7,000 square feet is adequate to integrate the VR staff and have a center for our current staff plus VR staff. So this is our recommendation. This one's a little involved, again, because of the uniqueness of extending plus adding a suite. So what we're recommending is that we add an additional 2,623 square feet for suite 700. That's the new one for a period of 5 years, beginning the later of February 1st, 2021, or at such time the space is ready for occupancy. At the same time, we're wanting to extend the current 5-year lease for the 4,389 square foot related to suite 300 by approximately 20 months to make it coterminous with the lease term of suite 700. And then the total square footage is at 7,012 square feet to be proposed at an average rate not to exceed $1,653 per square foot. And that's excluding the triple nets, which is taxes, insurance, common area maintenance, utilities, and janitorial. So that is a recommendation. I'll be happy to answer any questions y'all have.
We have any questions? Randy, I've got one. The addition of the VR space for, right, you said 5 people is an average of 500 square feet per person. Is that normal?
No.
Typically, no, it's not. It's fairly large for five. But to remind you, VR will pay for that. I mean, the lease is in the COG's name. VR will provide the funding to us to reimburse us for that. But typically, no, that we wouldn't go that large for five staff. But there's just not a lot of options in that area, in the Turtle area. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, that's not only is it just right next to us, so the location is very suitable, but there's just not a lot other to choose from.
And then we're gonna look at, there has to be a, didn't we decide that, IT can be run, or they're going to build a new IT room, Randy? I don't remember.
That's a good question. I'll have to look to.
I know they're going to build a bigger janitorial closet, and it's going to be over on their side.
We believe that it's going to work with our current space, our server room. We think it's going to work. We have some space in a rack, so we think it's going to work.
Okay.
And normally they've got the unique considerations of the VR staff. You didn't mention anything about that being in the TI. Is it?
Yeah, the management went out there and saw it and saw the current office square footage and everything and said they were good with it. So you're right. They typically want at least 80 square feet for a private office and certain square footage for cubes and things like that. But they, based on what was sitting in there, they said they were good. So they didn't ask for any additional TI to be modifying any of the office space.
Okay. There will be some automatic doors added though, right, Randy?
Yes, we will have to add automatic doors. Now that will come, they will pay for that also. That's not in this rate. That's on top of it that we'll have to, we'll fund it. VR will reimburse us for handicap doors at the main entrance. And then I believe at the main restroom, we'll have to have that as well. So there'll be some things. Right. We call those one-time costs, but that will be on top of what I showed you here. We will do that in addition to this.
Okay. Any other comments, discussion? Do I hear a motion?
I'm making a motion that we accept this recommendation.
And I second that, Carlton.
Thank you.
Okay, and just to clarify, as Randy's written it or proposed it?
Yes.
Okay.
On the motion.
So we have a motion from Carlton and a second from Gay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the UI work search requirements. Mr. Setzer.
Oh, boy. So just to remind y'all that a couple of weeks ago, we were given the option by TWC as effective November 1st, they reinstated job search for UI claimants. But for some reason that will stay in cyberspace, I guess, they decided that they didn't want to go back at the state level and leave it at zero. They reinstated it, but then they started, I guess they were having second thoughts. And so what they did is they extended the option to each board to set that, depending on the local conditions, anywhere from zero to the three. Now recall our board policy that we suspended earlier this year at the beginning of this when it was set to zero. Our board policy says whatever the state's level is, we go two above that. So they told us this on I think it was a Wednesday or a Thursday. We had to have the answer to them to Saturday. And so we had some conversations with Roger and David and told them our rationale. And it basically, Dallas Dallas did not want to go, they wanted to leave theirs at 3 because of the surge that's coming and everything. They had a lot of reasons. And Tarrant was leading that way too. And I felt it would drive a lot of confusion across the region if we weren't all 3 aligned the same way. So we opted, Dallas, Tarrant, and our board, we opted and notified the state that we were going to stay at 0 and that we would reconsider in a month. And so that's where we are. And we are still, I won't say struggling. There's lots of indicators out there on what's going on, but we haven't hit on the right one that we think is going to give us the right intelligence to make a decision as to what, should we go up? Should we stay at 0? So we're still working on that. And we'll probably do that somewhat in concert with Dallas and Tarrant, but we very well could be at a point at the end of this month, where we would be changing ours, and deviating from the commonality that we have right now. It was kind of interesting. And I think there's still some dominoes to fall in that, the only other board that remained at 0 was at El Paso. And we're all hearing a lot of what's going on in El Paso with COVID. And actually it's beginning to peek its nasty little head up a lot more in what we do. Cause we're having some primary, but we're having some secondary exposures across our footprint now that affect our workforce centers. We had to close Weatherford last week. Because of all people, the security guard tested positive for COVID. So everybody went to the house for 2 weeks. And now we're seeing onesie twosies, you know, secondaries. So that all makes it harder, somewhat harder for people to do job search and go to work, be interviewed, all that kind of stuff. So having said that, I think the next couple of weeks is going to be kind of interesting as we see what COVID does and we see what Dallas and Tarrant think they're going to do going forward. And we will keep y'all apprised. I think that we can, I think y'all gave us the board, I bet you gave staff the latitude to set that for you. So, but we will certainly get back with y'all as the situation develops. And if we find something that is just really a rock solid indicator as to indicate the conditions out there, we will certainly bring that back to y'all. So that's kind of the long version of where we are. We are at 0 and we've got about 3 weeks left in November to see how things develop. And we will be making a decision at the end of this month on what to do. So be glad to take your questions.
Very good. Didn't we talk about this one time that there's a real difficulty in tracking this, people looking for jobs?
Well, in normal circumstances, no. Normal circumstances where they're required to search, be it 3 or 5 like we were at before, they have to certify every time they go in to request their next reimbursement check that they have done that job search. And then that attestation is subject to review by TWC. If they come out and they get selected for review, they'll come out and say, all right, let me see your work search log. So with it being at 0, you know, people will, the people that are really interested in looking for work, they're going to be out there all the time. They're going to be beating the bushes all the time. But with the COVID benefit having stopped a while back, I think more and more people are going to turning to unilaterally doing job search to get back into the workforce.
Can I follow up with just an estimate of how many times does TWC check one of those job logs?
It's probably a very small percentage, Carlton, to be honest.
But it's totally random.
Huh? Dana, go ahead.
I was just going to share that they don't really share that information. It is something that something that they manage on their end. The only opportunity we have to provide input is if we know that there is fraud being identified, we'd report that up to TWC.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? Okay. The next item is the North Central Texas Council of Government Contact Deliverable Report. It's got my name next to it. I have read this report again, but I need to ask Christina, what is it that we're to do with this? Because I know it's been pushed back on, and that's the reason why it's on this agenda.
We actually brought it to the September board meeting, and it's just something that we do annually kind of as a recap to show what the deliverables are in the contract and provide you sort of like a progress report of how we feel that we've met those deliverables the previous year. At that time, you requested that I put it on the executive committee agenda. I don't know what conversation you were anticipating or planning for.
Okay. Well, I was of the impression that this was something staff put on an earlier agenda, and it was unclear at that time, and we had a crowded agenda on that meeting, and therefore we moved it.
Well, at one point, I think when y'all originally saw it, Roger, we didn't have that final column over there. There was, isn't there another column? Or is that citation the last column?
That's the last column I have.
I may be thinking about a different report then. So,
Roger, can I comment, make one comment?
Certainly.
I think this is a good summary document, but what it does not do for the board is actually reflect a status. I mean, I see the status column there that says ongoing, but if the frequency requirement for financial reports is monthly, the status in my view should be that, you know, at this point, 10 of 12 complete, and annual financial report pending scheduled delivery 15 December. Because these are specific deliverable requirements in the contract, and yeah, they may be recurring annually, but there's a precise and tangible deliverable associated with each of them. And so what I think is meant to be conveyed here is actually completion of contract deliverables in a quantifiable manner.
And if we wanted to pick a particular point in time, like Christina said, we presented in September, it's for the contract anniversary date, which I believe is June the 18th. We could certainly have a fixed point in time snapshot, say July 1st, and we could go in and say, completed, if that's what you would prefer to see, if that would make more sense to you, we could certainly do
that. And if I could, just for the group, go back to when we were talking about creating these initially, how do we look back to say the contract performance was completed? I mean, this document doesn't tell us that. If we keep a record of what the deliverables are, we could look back a year from now and quantifiably verify to say, yes, look, all this that was required was completed. It may seem monotonous, but that's because y'all do such a great job. I mean, it's not looking to try to trip anybody up. It's actually documenting the good things are done and they're completed on time and all is going in compliance with the contract as written. So that's just, I think, a simple way of looking at it. Hopefully that's valuable.
I think that was an excellent added comment that I think really puts it in perspective.
Well, if I might make a comment or two, this we generated this document. We initiated it from your contractor side because we wanted to make sure that at the end of each year, we presented what we had done and that y'all looked at it and agreed with it. And if you recall, the first time we brought it, there was reluctance on the part of the board to adopt it, approve it, or anything. So we have just continued to bring it forward, and maybe that's the reason that word ongoing is in there so much. I think we would like it better if we could bring it to you on the annual basis and talk about these things. Many of them are things that are just happening on an ongoing basis. The financial updates, just like what we're doing, what you did today, performance, financial, to the committees, to the board. So I think that's a little bit of the conundrum that we're dealing with here is that if we brought it to you for a fixed period of time, we dated this, you know, July the 1st, 2020, then y'all could look, we could discuss it, y'all could look at it, and y'all could say, we agree with that. We approve your presentation of meeting the deliverables in the contract.
I think you both just helped me clarify and understand why it was on our agenda to begin with. That's exactly what it was. It was put on one of our executive committee agendas once upon a time. I think the comment prefacing it was that we would accept it. We had other items on the agenda that lengthened that meeting. We said, hey, let's punt this down the road. So here we are today looking at it. I think Kenny's comment about if we had a lot of issues going on, we would definitely be going to this, looking at it, saying, okay, you know, what do we need to address? Where did we fall short? But under the circumstances that we're dealing with now, it's not on the front burner as from a board member's perspective. From a contractor's perspective, I could certainly understand them saying, hey, board, the year's up. Did we do okay? I think that's kind of where we are.
Roger, this is Carvin. I do think, though, Kenny's hit a point on that status. Like, just taking that very first one, if we had a date for the report, then we should be able to answer, like, put in the last date financial reports were provided. That would be the answer to the status question. So, if you know, it would be today. If the requirement frequency is monthly, then you would fill in the status would be today.
Correct.
And that could be done on all the rest of them. So at any point, the staff could bring this to the executive committee and say, this is where we're at. And you could accept it as of that point in time, which I think is what David wants, some response from the board to say, yeah, we accept your report. And then the blanks would be filled in instead of ongoing. They would be, we gave you our last annual report, you know, whatever date it was.
Right. And I would even take that a little bit further. Deborah is going to love this comment. As I was asked yesterday about what the website or the potential question on the examination was, what does the website do for the board members? And I think I answered, if I was given that question, that it has our governing documents, the common documents, the monitoring reports, the performance and financial reports, and the board calendars. This could very easily be maintained on the website or used as a control document for these various control points, I'll say. Those that have documents supporting them would likely be on the website already. So this could really serve as somewhat of an index to the control documents and the common documents that are on the board member only portion of the website.
I like where this discussion is going, but I'd like to point out a couple of things about some of these items. Just looking at the fourth one down, cash requests to TBC and other board funding agencies. I would not want to get this report into a mode of trying to keep it up daily, but perhaps monthly or definitely before the committee meeting start or the board meeting. Processing of payments. We do that every week. I scroll down a little bit. Whoever's displaying it, Sheree, are you
displaying? That's the reason why I said those that mention reports could be used as a control. There's some processes that are ongoing that you wouldn't document on the website. Yeah. They would not be considered common or control documents. But no, I agree with you. I think that's a good conversation. And we probably should have some kind of an annual overview of contract, you know, and maybe that's something that oversight and accountability could look at. I'm not asking that. I'm just throwing it up as an idea. Any other comments or discussion on this item? Do we leave it here? Do we talk about it in the future? Do you staff want to get back to us with comments on it?
If you would like for us to go back and this hasn't substantially changed from July, if you would like for us to go back and make it a July version, and then those status items that you know that have definite time frames in there, we could change that to complete. We certainly update some of the others if that's what you'd like.
What I think might be better is to make it an October 1 document and close out last fiscal year and start or maybe we should use contract year. You might have a good.
Yeah, that's what it's associated with is the contract year.
Well, this year we submitted it in September to align with the end of the fiscal year. So we would need to pick one. And
I think David was right. I think contract is June.
It is a June date.
Yeah, so maybe it would be better to have something that doesn't renew on the fiscal because there's so much that probably does. Maybe it would be better to close it out in June, bring it forward to date, and then at one of these executive committee meetings coming up, look at it.
Yeah, the template's not going to change. The dates are the things that are going to be changed, but it would give you the capability to go into this document and, you know, specify, well, these things were complete, you know, on a yearly basis.
Right. Right. Okay. Anything else on this item? All right. The next item is the local tri-agency group with my name associated with it as well. And where this came from, we had a discussion with Kenny and Tarleton about Tarleton's strategic planning effort, which I'd kind of like to hear comments from Kenny if he's able to squeeze him in, because I'm sure he's going to be commenting on this further. Kenny had made a comment that it would be interesting to have like a tri-agency 2.0, I think was his word, in the local area. And that came on the heels of hearing the executive director of Texas Workforce Commission, Ed Serna, in his new role as executive director, saying that one of his objectives was to come out with another tri-agency follow-up. And then in my assuming the role as chair of TOB, I happened to mention that in an organizational discussion. I think it may have been with the executive committee of TOB, and Mark Guthrie, I believe it was from Gulf Coast Board, which is, I think, the largest board in the state, maybe the largest board in the country. He's also on the NOB board of directors. He's an attorney. He's been on the board since boards were created. He piped up and he said, Roger, that tri-agency workforce effort is exactly in a workforce board's wheelhouse. It is it could be the crown jewel of what workforce boards do. So knowing that I had tri-agency comment across all three platforms, I thought, you know what, that coupled with what Kenny has done with our strategic planning, the effort at Tarleton, and the fact that our TIP strategy work is all kind of pointing to the educational component, the career exploration component, the community partnership component, I thought, you know, maybe we should revisit this and kind of talk about, and, you know, I don't have any specific ideas or plans, but it is entirely possible that TOB could work on a plan with Texas Workforce Commission, where the, not the governor, but the Texas Workforce, with Ed Cerna's comments saying that he would like to do it, you know, start doing some tri-agency work in the major metropolitan areas in Texas, and do it with local people rather than, you know, CEOs of international companies that sit down at various tables. We could do it with local corporate representatives, local education representatives, local workforce representatives. I'm sure we could get a lot of support. And I think it would benefit all of the boards in the regions quite a bit better. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out and see what people thought of the idea, and if any people with staff or board had any comments on it. So I don't want everybody speaking at once, so I'll give you all numbers. If
you know me, I'm always going to have a comment, but I was kind of waiting to see if any of the board members had one. Well, so one of the things that I think lends itself to this, too, is our regional workforce council, which is the regional group that we've kind of been on a hiatus because of COVID and some other things going on. But I'd really like to kind of frame this maybe in the context of seeing if Kerry O'Connor is interested in taking it on, as, because that is our regional group. And I mean, for this, we could even expand it and bring in maybe, you know, like Texoma or something like that, because they're on the north end of our territory. So I think it's got merit, and I think we just need to flesh it out a little bit and see what kind of a structure makes the most sense.
Okay. Anybody else? Kenny?
Well, Roger, I thank you for the summary there, and it's really exciting, I think, to hear the interest in other areas within the state. You know, I think the significance of this is the regional application of it, because you know, economies within the state are somewhat localized to regional industry bases and areas of education that support those industries, and just the whole idea of that coming together, I think, is one of the things that led to Tarleton's interest in working with Workforce Solutions with their strategic plan, as the focus of the university turns toward truly workforce development versus just the idea of providing, you know, educational opportunities and being a partner with industry. And so the idea of the need to create a dialogue about how we move this forward, I know the leadership at Tarleton would be interested in that. And I think there's other universities, North Texas, I know Annabelle has mentioned, and Christine, work that we're doing with them. And we do so much work with the community college network because of the grant process. But that's not the, you know, the full spectrum of educating the workforce. And so bringing this together and then the communities involved with it would be it'd be really neat to see where it could all go.
Okay. Any other comments or suggestions? All right, I'll take that. I'll take that back. I'll visit with Dave a little bit about it and see if we can start keying up. The next item on the agenda, very interesting one. David Setcher is going to give us an update on COVID-19. David Setcher, are you still with us?
I think he might have just stepped away. He did go off video and mute.
Okay, while we're waiting on him, the agenda for next week's meeting of November 17th. Anybody have any comments on the agenda or items that they would like to request to add or remove? Or any comments in general? Basically outlines what many of the items we've discussed today.
No, sir.
No comments? Okay, we will
David back.
Okay, I don't think we need to take any action on the agenda. David, are you back with us?
I'm back. Sorry about that. So I guess you're ready for the COVID update.
Yes, sir. That's the last item on the agenda today.
Okay. I don't have any big earth-shattering things to update. You know, we sent last week was the first update we'd done for a while. And remember, our strategy is to not bombard y'all with something weekly. If it's just routine stuff, we've gotten, you know, operationally, we've gotten very good at operating in this environment. But whenever we have a major change, like the job search requirement and some of the things that have been going on in childcare, we certainly want to continue to update y'all. So outside of that update, we don't have a lot more to update you with, although, as I mentioned earlier, we are beginning to see a lot more instances of exposure across our footprint with staff, both staff, Equa staff, and our staff. We've got some quarantines going on right now, as a matter of fact.
David?
So, yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to take this opportunity to mention, I hope everybody got the ability to see David Bristol's granddaughter in his lap a few minutes ago. And I see that his mic is not muted. So, and I don't know how many people know it, but David is by virtue of the COVID situation coming to us virtually as well.
Yes. Yes. So I'll touch base with, echo both what David Setcher was just saying. In my company, over 10% of our workforce currently is in quarantine or has been exposed. In my house personally, 100% of all of the members of my household now have COVID. It's interesting that it's all varying degrees. One member had a very bad cough and chest congestion. My wife had really severe headaches. The granddaughter had a really runny nose, and mine is just kind of fatigue and a little bit of nasal congestion and a headache. But we are lucky, and as Dr. Goodwin knows, that we did have one of my employees pass away from complications from COVID. So I'll simply tell David, hey, thank you for keeping the staff and our customers as healthy as possible. And we've done all the things for my company. We've shut things down in areas that need it, but there's still, you can get exposed in any way. So I just simply wish everybody a safe next couple of weeks while we get through this spike. So thanks.
Well, it's certainly good news. The vaccine landscape is certainly looking very, very promising. So, but that doesn't do much for people between now and the time we can get it, which probably be late spring, early summer. So we still have to be very focused and on, constantly on guard and taking following the CDC guidelines, which we're doing every time we have one. So it's just the way of life right now. I mean, it's that's all you can say about it. So, David, we hope all you and yours get well. So that's kind of that's kind of where I wanted this update to go, Roger, just to kind of talk about, you know, where we are in general. And these next, I mean, predictions over the next 12 weeks are some of the most concerning that we've had. So we're certainly going to be doing everything we can to mitigate the impact on our staff and on the Equa staff and then on the people we serve. We don't want to be an entity that gets to be a super spreader or something like that. So that's kind of the current state of what we're doing with COVID.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's an excellent way to finish up this meeting. If you look at the New York Times COVID section, it indicates that the U.S. has spiked higher now than we did in March, April, or July. You know, hearing the status of the vaccination, I think it's going to be, as some predicted, it's going to be a very interesting holiday season as we move through it. We're meeting tomorrow to, as a company, kind of talk about what we're going to do, how we're going to get through it with minimal, with maximum mitigation planning. But yeah, it's good to see people that have unfortunately contacted it with minimal symptoms and minimal impact, and the death rate is dropping along with the increase. Awareness of what they're dealing with and the therapies, but it's as bad as it has gotten at this point, and looks like it's going to continue to spike up for the near term. So I think it's important to make sure we're doing everything we can to mitigate it.
One other thing I'll mention, Roger, we are doing our groundbreaking at Denton on Thursday. We are tightening up our COVID protocols. We're going to have chairs that are with social distancing imposed over that, and mask. And Stephanie will be running around with cleaners and cleaning everything as we go. And that's probably going to be the last time you're going to see us out in public for a while.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's wise. Okay, is there anything else that anybody wants to bring forward under other business or discussion of future agenda items? Okay, hearing none, I will add that I think it was this invitation I saw that I think went to all board members and said it's optional. I think that was an excellent ad. Whoever came up with that, thank you. Thank you for everybody that participated and showed up at this meeting. Your involvement is certainly appreciated and helps build the board, making it better. Having said that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. We stand adjourned. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.